Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, there is no denying that data is extremely valuable, and for lots of people, the moment they wake up, their wearable tech is tracking their data, their steps, their calories burned, sleep quality and periods, among other things. Now, you might benefit from all those statistics, but who else has access to them and what do they use that data for? Well, Elaine Burke is a journalist and host of the For Tech's Sake podcast, and Elaine is on the line. Hello, Elaine.
Hi, how are you?
We all know those apps I've described, but what are they doing with the information that they gather on our health and on our lifestyle?
Yeah, so from the user side, it is, as you said, like they're trying to live this quantified life and extract insights from the data that these apps collect that might tell them about how they're feeling and their various cycles, when to take it easy and things like that. But because these apps don't tend to store data locally, it's not really just for you. And if you read the terms and conditions, in a lot of cases, it's data that they actually use to sell to the data broker industry, which is huge and vast. If you've ever, you know, looked into the list of partnerships on consent forms when you're visiting a new website, you'll see the long, long list of these companies that are involved in things like ad targeting and data brokering. And essentially what a lot of the terms and conditions, especially for EU users, will involve is sharing data that is meant to be anonymized. But there's also issues there, because when you collect a lot of data and you start to group it together, which is what data brokers will do, it actually becomes possible to de-anonymize it. Now, that does take effort and data mining, but those tools are available to bad actors these days and a lot more accessible than they would have been previously.
And Elaine, when we're talking about health data, is there a particular premium on that in the business?
I think the whole health tech industry is seen as highly valuable. In 2023, one market research firm found that it had nearly reached $1 trillion in value. And it's estimated that 10 years on, in 2033, it will be triple that and up to $3 trillion in value. So that's the entire health tech industry. And that includes, you know, fitness wearables, as well as things that are maybe more directly related to health, because there are also people who are using apps to maybe track diabetes and things like that. And then there's also even telehealth services where people can access medical services or remote doctor's appointments through apps on their phone or services that they engage with digitally.
So if you're handing over,
this whole industry is lucrative.
If you're handing over all of this information, how does it manifest itself if it's being sold on or if it's being used as a commodity? Is it that you're going to see ads relating to perceived health problems or issues or interests that you might have?
Yeah, so that's the thing. There's many ways that this can be used as a positive, because it is health data, it's useful data. Even in science, there exist these things called longitudinal studies, which are just checking in with people over a lifetime on various aspects of their health and well-being and trying to understand new things about how our various lifestyle factors might impact our health on a long-term basis. So scientifically, this kind of data could be really valuable, really useful, as longitudinal studies have shown. But what's happening here is you basically have a lot of private companies kind of gathering the level of data that you'd normally get from what would be a scientific endeavor. And they're not necessarily using it all the time for the public good or selling it to third parties and data brokers who are going to use it for the public good. It is often used in terms of ad targeting. That is a huge use case for it. And you can see even some data brokers will have categories and segments for people that says, like, likely to have anxiety or likely to have diabetes, and to like target things to people in that way. And that can give people pause when they realize that that's how this stuff can come to be used.
I'm sure it would if you were on a list likely to have X, Y and Z.
Yeah, and there are also concerns as well that, because like the insurance industry would be very data hungry, you know, they're in the business of trying to forecast and make predictions, and they do that based on past data. And if you are gathering lots of data, and again, it's not specifically that this would be about targeting one person, but if they gather a lot of data, and sometimes if you get a lot of data, you can also make fairly questionable associations, because you have enough data to make anything look like it's a correlation. So they might end up inferring things like, oh, if I live in a certain area, I'm probably predicated to get this condition. And it might not be based on a good scientific analysis, but a basic data analysis. And that means that if you fit that brief, maybe your premiums are going up. So even though it's not going to target you specifically by trying to forecast your health, which is something they technically could do, but there are data legislations to try and protect against that level of targeting, you can still have these downstream effects on consumers because of the analysis that's taken place across this broad sweep of data.
And Elaine, there was a specific warning for women who are tracking their periods or their menstrual cycle using some of those apps that people might see on smartphones. A warning from the University of Cambridge, who did some research on this, and they said you need to know about the safety risks and the privacy risks of handing over this information.
Yeah, so this is a report that they put out recently called The High Stakes of Tracking Menstruation. And they looked at a number of what they called cycle tracking apps, because as well as tracking, say, the dates of your period, they can track many other things. There's a lot of information that users can be prompted to share with these apps. And again, it depends on the individual app, what their data sharing policies are. And it also depends on where you as a user are based, because we are thankfully in the EU protected a lot more with not only the General Data Protection Regulation, but there's a new regulation that's augmenting that in terms of health data that's now coming on stream just this year to try and address this idea of health data becoming part of ad targeting in this industry. But the UK, that's left, the EU has a semblance of GDPR, but it's not quite got the total protections, and these newer health data regulations aren't going to take shape there. So these researchers kind of looked at like raising awareness among people on how their data might be used by these apps, to actually pay attention to maybe the terms of the app that you're using, the privacy protections that are afforded to you based on the individual app, and consider what that means for you. And they've also actually trying to campaign for the likes of the NHS and public health bodies to develop these apps themselves, because then you could develop it more responsibly. You could develop it in that it's not necessarily about creating a vast pool of data to be sold on. Maybe it is about creating data to help public services. If it's used in that way, I think people are a bit more forgiving about giving their data away. But also they could look at developing something that stores data locally and is just for the benefit of the individual user. Because the popularity of these apps does show that people are interested in tracking their various life cycles in this way, and that could be useful to the individual. But the amount of private companies profiting off of that probably isn't the most ethical way to move forward with this.
Okay, so you think that those warnings from the University of Cambridge to women might be well founded then?
Yeah, and I do think especially like in the US, this is an even greater concern, especially since the dismantling of Roe v. Wade, because what you can find then is that if someone is in the case of possibly being wrapped up in a court case for trying to seek what has become an illegal abortion, these apps could actually reveal things in that case. And if people are also sharing that data, they were afraid after the dismantling of Roe v. Wade that if these apps shared data, that law enforcement agencies could even use them to try to find people to prosecute. And this hasn't happened that I know of yet, but it is a possibility, and we do need to weigh these things up. And we're talking about the surveillance that can be enacted through what we think are innocuous programs that are just helping us in our day to day.
Okay, so be wary of what you're handing over and to whom. Elaine, thanks so much. Elaine Burke there, host of For Tech's Sake podcast. We're going to take a break before news.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.